All right, welcome once again, everybody. It's Wednesday, August 5th. Thanks for being here with me today. Appreciate that. And we've got a pretty full agenda today, and I'll outline that in just a second. But as I always do, if you're new to the call, two ways you can participate. You can type your questions in. You can do that by looking on the right-hand side of your screen. You should have a GoToWebinar control panel, and you'll see a blue bar on there. It says questions, and you just type away, and it'll show up on my screen, and I'll answer those as they start to come in and at the appropriate time. If you do have a computer with a microphone and speakers, and you're able to talk through that, well, you can participate another way, and that's to come on the call, the webinar live, if you will. Just raise your hand, and I'll see your hand raised on my screen, and then I can open that up for you as well. I also dropped the syllabus in the handout section. Most of you, I think, who have been on my call before are getting familiar with that. If you're brand new to the call, if you look on the right-hand side, there's these little blue bars that go across there. One of them should say handouts. And if you see a handout, it should say -1 on there, which means you have a handout in there. You can click that, open that up, and that way the syllabus that we have in front of us, you can have on your screen and download to your computer, whatever you would like to do. That might be especially important today because I'm going to start. Here's the four things that I have covered for you today. I want to do a little update on hardest hit funds, and Jackie Lambertson was nice enough to send this information my way. She was working on a deal in Indiana and came upon their latest program, so I'll go into that. Dennis Shannon has an issue on due diligence, and I'm going to delve a little deeper into that one, expand upon the subject matter a little bit, and show you what I found from what they were looking for. And Gilbert Ross had a question on filing, and we're going to cover that as well. And then for those who want to, I'm going to cover at the end of the call a little test your knowledge. We did this, I guess, a couple months ago, maybe, and it was a heck of a lot of fun. And a lot of people really enjoyed it, so we're going to try it again. It's basically a series of multiple choice questions, and we'll go through them, and at the end we'll answer them, and then we'll come back and explain why the answer is what it is. So we'll have some fun with that. If you're not interested in that, well, you can tune out on that one, and that's why I saved that for the end of the call. Okay, so first thing here, I did mention to you with the hardest hit funds, there are so many states now that have so much money that they need to spend that I would expect states to start to take some action on that. And I talked about Florida in the class and all these other states there. Well, Indiana is doing exactly what I said a lot of these states would do. Florida has done it as well. But here's some of the highlights that that Jackie was able to find. Excuse me one second here. I'm on a call. You were scheduled for today? Okay. Jeez, can you come back in an hour or two, or is that not out of the question? Well, for reschedule. I'm sorry about that. All right, sorry about that, guys. That's a first. Okay. I'll have to edit this right now. Okay, life happens. So anyhow, as I was saying, it's not surprising that some of these states are expanding upon their programs here. So Jackie was doing her own due diligence for a deal in Indiana, and she was kind enough to send this to me. And you now have a copy of it. That's why I dropped the folder over there. I also put that in our news section. And by the way, I'm kind of guilty of not submitting a lot to this recently, but because of Facebook and everything else. If you're not following us on Facebook, I write articles and stuff like that from time to time. A little behind on that as well. But if you go under Connect and you go to where the archives are, where you guys see the recorded calls, I've also added that information. Well, where is it? I know I did. Okay. I'll have to go back and see what the deal is on that, but I added that earlier today. Make this a bit smaller. No. Okay, I'll have to go back and take a look at that. But I add that back in. I probably just need to refresh my screen. That's probably what it is. Yep. Sorry, bear with me a minute there. I've had this open for an idle too long here. Let's try it again. Yeah, there we go. Okay. So I added that information here. So I will put news and such from time to time so you guys can see that as well. All righty. So getting back to this, what Indiana has done is they have increased the amount that they will pay towards catching somebody up on their loan. So that's now $30,000 up from $18,000. They've also increased the number of payments they'll make on their behalf moving forward from 18 months to a full 24 months. They've also, as I predicted, they loosened up the qualifications. Okay, because remember, this hardest hit fund money, it's either spent in that state or it goes back to the federal government by the end of December 2017. And nobody wants to send money back. They want to send it, they want to spend it in their own individual state. Okay, let's see. Eligible homeowners have, this is another great one here. Okay, so we got the increase in the pay as well as the amount of payments. But what they've also done is this. If you are working on a short payoff or a deed in lieu of some type, they will kick in money for relocation expenses. Okay, so eligible homeowners with unaffordable mortgage payments who obtain a short sale or deed in lieu of foreclosure from their lender slash servicer and leave their home in a saleable condition may receive $2,500 to assist with moving and relocations and up to $5,000 paid to their lenders and servicers to help facilitate the short sale or deed in lieu of foreclosure. So that's a very interesting thing in there as well. So again, Jackie, thank you for sending this to me. And let's see, there's some other information you guys can read there, but those are the main highlights. So once again, what they've really done in a nutshell is they loosened up the qualification. So more people now qualify. They have increased the amount of money that they're paying up front to catch people up. And they've increased the amount of time that they'll pay monthly payments going forward. And now they've got a short sale or deed in lieu assistance program also. Okay, so that used to be, you know, a lot of times we do the cash for keys, right? And we do a deed in lieu of cash for keys. Well, here Indiana's coming up with the money, which is fantastic. And we may be able to get more than the $2,500 for facilitating the sale. So good news there. All right. Let's see here. Hey, Emmanuel, good to see you. Al, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, Gilbert, these are live, right? So no hiding that. Oh, man. Okay, so I'll let you guys read through that. The next one I had up here was Dennis Shannon. And Dennis came by a note. I don't know how, and he's not able to be on the call today. And let's see. So this is what he sent in, and I'm going to delve into this a little bit further. So this was not a note through a tape. This was not a colonial note. I'm not even sure how he found this, or was this the one? No, that's somebody else. Okay. Let's see. I'm sending this in late. I sent it in last night. Didn't get it. I'm looking at a note. It's a vacant lot, okay, residential vacant lot valued somewhere between $30,000 to $40,000. And it did have a house on it. The house was torn down because of a hurricane and deterioration and then a fire. So house is gone. It is an empty lot. The unpaid balance in the note is $170,000. Okay, obviously still on the house. Purchase price on the note is $12,650. There's a recorded lien from the city that's growing $25 per day. So there's a daily fine that's now on this property because they're not keeping the grass cut. Okay, and that could increase higher actually as well when you look at the lien. Once we agree on the price, the only documentation they provided was a copy of the note and mortgage, which I already had downloaded from county records. No borrower file, no payment history, title policy, BPO, nothing. So he wasn't happy with that. But again, most people don't have that. Let's see. There was a foreclosure case and a final judgment for the foreclosure in 2010, but the sale was canceled and it was never taken to a sale. There are two previous unsatisfied released mortgages prior to the one that I am purchasing. See the O&E. I took this further than I would because the property is local, and also I thought this was a seller who could be a good resource for me in the future. Now I'm thinking maybe not so much. So my question is, do you have any thoughts about the other mortgages and what happened here? So this is really a question of, you know, the chain of the mortgages, the what's the situation with the deed? Has this been foreclosed upon? Has it not? Were these other loans paid off or not? So he's trying to drill down into, do I have a viable asset here to purchase? So the first thing that kind of came into my mind was, normally I would think that the insurance from this would pay off the lender. But apparently that may not have happened. So let's see, Ken. Okay, Ken, I'll point out where that is. Again, you might have to refresh your screen. Okay, so that's really what the question becomes. And he sent some documentation as indicated there. And one of them was this. I'll make it bigger. Just give me a second. Okay, this simply just shows what the property taxes are. This is Broward County, where I was born and raised. And so you can see tax valuations. The way we do tax valuations in Florida, like other states, has really nothing to do with the fair market value. There's this whole mathematical thing they go through to come up with this assessed value, and then they apply this millage rate. So they just multiply those numbers out, and that becomes your tax on that. So there's zero taxes due 2015. Here's what the taxes are. Obviously very, very low because this is just a vacant lot, right? The house has been completely torn down at this point. So not a whole lot to go on right there. Here is the lien that's on the property that is accruing every single day, okay? So the city of City of Lauderhill, I should say, is the petitioner. They're the respondent. So code enforcement was what? They had overgrown property, needs to be mowing. They don't have a daily fine for that one, but it does have to be completed. And then the other one is repair, remove, replace this damaged fence. That's the one that's getting a daily fine of $25. That fine, by the way, could go up to as much as, $500 per day, which you can see right down here. If they don't fix it, they become a repeat violator, and then it could go up to $500 per day. Now, those are the type of liens in most cases today, because these governments need money as well. Those are not going to be foreclosed away. Those will probably have to pay. So he's looking at what could this be, because this goes all the way back to recording back in 2014. So where is it now? What could those fees possibly be at this point in time? Okay, and let's see here. We've got this information. Hang on a second. Drag this one over. Okay. On this one, the ownership and encumbrance report was done. And this was done very recently, obviously. And Dennis probably had this done to check things out here. So it says apparent title vested in. So title, of course, is the deed of the property. So John Rachel and Phyllis B. Rachel, under a warranty deed, back in 1995. And then there is another grant deed recorded in December 2011. Okay. A grant deed is similar to a quit claim deed, but where somebody's just granting, somebody's is just giving a right of ownership in there. So we can look up what those mean. And you've got some other encumbrances here. And this is, you can see where he's kind of looking through this chain of events here. And we see this stuff, you know, obviously all the time. This mortgage and then that mortgage and then this mortgage. And then I went here, then I went there, then I went there. And so this is what one of the concerns were on this is, what about these other loans that were there? Are they still there? Are they gone? That sort of thing. You can also see that it has been under foreclosure. Notice of list pendings here. List pendings being again Latin for lawsuit pending. So we know that this is a judicial foreclosure. Of course, that's what we have here in Florida. Let's see. They've got some judgments and liens on the property as well. There's the $25 a day one. And not sure what that one is. I can't read what that writing is. Okay, then they've got some other info on there. So that was the report that they got. And finally, we have this one. And this one shows the foreclosure action. Okay. When there's a judicial foreclosure, there's a series of events that occurs. The final event being the property is sold at the courthouse. Okay. So in this case, in a judicial process, the step before the actual scheduling of the sale is to get the final summary judgment. So that's what this is. So AmeriQuest took this all the way up through the process, except for it didn't schedule the sale. Perhaps that's what we're trying to find out. So we know it's been taken down the road here, but this goes all the way back to 2009. So again, part of the question is, has this been foreclosed upon or not? And you can see they did the full tally, and you've probably seen this in the three-day class when I'm teaching that shows here's what this now has accrued, okay? All of this different balance here, and that's what they are getting final judgment on. So the final judgment determines this. The judge looks at this and says, okay, yes, that is the final amount, and you can foreclose up to that, recover up to that amount. Okay. So that's what that judgment has already been done. All right. And that's what those look like. Okay. So they sent this in early enough, and I was able to do a little work on this. So that's why I decided to really expand upon this example. So first of all, we can see where this is located in Florida. Okay, and this is in the South Florida, Fort Lauderdale area. I spent actually a lot of time here in Melrose Park, had a good friend over there, and I lived right over here. So this, I know this area pretty good. Haven't been there in a while, but here's what this property looks like. So just kind of confirming, it's just this big, empty, vacant lot in a residential area. Okay, that's really all there is to it, right there. So in a case like this, when you don't have all the documentation from the sellers provided to you, you would either again have to get an O&E report. Now his O&E report didn't really show all the documents and those sorts of things in there. So versus the one that you guys are used to seeing, where it gives you the recap on the top, the summary, if you will, and then it has all the other documents in it. So he could order another one of those or do a little research on his own. So if you're playing along at home or you want to, I'm going to take you right through this whole process and see what we can unfold in this. So I went to netronline.com, okay, and clicked on public records. And now I'm just going to put in the zip code, or I could click on the state and click on the county. Either way, I happen to remember the zip code 33313. So I'm going to do it that way, 33313, and then it takes me to Broward County. All right. So I'm going to click on Broward County, and that pulls up for me now all the various government entities in there where I might find some data. So if I'm looking at taxes, I would look at obviously revenue collection. If I want to see recorded documents, then I'm going to look here. If I'm looking for subject property information, I'm going to look there. Okay, and I've got phone numbers and all that sort of stuff. And all those websites are right here. So if I go to the appraiser's office, the first one, this is what it looks like. And I can search by owner's name. I can search by property address, all that sort of thing. So I know the owner's name, so maybe I'll start there. Okay. And yes, this is our property. So I know I have the, well, that's where they rent. Sorry about that. That's their mailing address. This is the site property. Yes, 670 Northwest 39th Avenue. So I know I landed on the right property here. So what can I gain from this? Well, really what I see here is assessed values. And as I said, in Florida, that's not really fair market value. I know they kind of indicate that here, but I wouldn't go by that. You know, this is something I'd really have to get the value down on this. Chances are, we didn't look at it on Google Earth, but chances are there's not many vacant lots around there. And that being the case, I really have to start to establish, well, what is this worth? Because what are you going to do with it? You know, it's there's no building on there, so there's no... You know, it's not like you can rent it or do anything like this. You can build on it, obviously. But what's it going to cost to build, and can you make a profit on that? For example, I have a lot up in Pensacola, and I met with a developer a couple months back. And I can't build on that lot and then sell the house for what it cost me to build it. Okay, the prices just aren't in line. It might cost me 80 grand to build a house on this lot that I have in Pensacola, but I could only sell it for 60. Well, obviously, I'm not going to build anything on it for right now. It's just going to kind of sit. I could dump it. I could sell it real cheap to somebody. So just doing a little satellite imagery here. This was taken, let's see. I'm not comfortable with that date. It says 2015. So I don't see, it's a big lot, but I don't see any other lots around in this area. So it's not as if you can get comparable sales for this thing that easily. So I would really want to nail down that value to see what that really is worth. What could I sell it for? Or what's it going to cost me to build? What's my end game on this? So I'd really want to nail down that value before I made a final decision on buying that note. Okay, so back to this. If I go to the appraiser's office in Florida, oh, I already clicked on that, didn't I? Where am I? Yeah, it gave us this. Now here they've got some hyperlinks where I could look up the deed and that sort of thing. Okay, so I can click on those. But not as helpful as you might think. It really depends upon the county and how they record these things. I do have some photographs here. This is 2011, and there you see back in 2010. Okay, so I've got some photos. So again, just subject property. In this case, not really showing me a lot, because what I'm really interested in this one was the documentation. Okay, so I'm going to go to the recorder's office here, and the name got kind of lucky. It's a unusual name, if you will, and YB. Jeez, is that a 4 or a Y? All right. 4. Yes. Okay. All right. Let me make your screen bigger here. Okay. So now on this one, I've got the proper name here, and they've got them. Looks like going back in time here. So the first thing we can see on here is that lien. Okay, this was the lien from the city. So I'm going to click on that, and you'll notice it's the same copy that we just saw earlier. And this is where they got it. Okay, this is the one that goes for $25 a day, might go up to $500 per day. Okay, that lien. Well, the good news there is right above that. Okay, back in January 2015, there is a release, revoke, or satisfy, or terminate from the city. So when you click on that one, guess what? This lien was recorded in error, so it has been released. Okay, so that lien is no longer a problem. It's been taken off, it's been removed, it was done in error, so there is no money owed on that. So that problem, extinguished. So that's good news. Now, as far as these deed transfers and everything else, you got to go back in time is the way I like to do it, to kind of see where it started to where it got to, rather than starting where are we now and how did we get there. I like to go back and start from really the beginning. So I'm going to go back a page here. And as you can see, I've clicked on numerous of these. They had some hospital liens on here, by the way, so there's obviously some medical type of issue there. But they had this with Countrywide. You know, back in 2002, Countrywide was a big lender, notorious for the no-doc loans, all that sort of stuff. And it was in foreclosure even back then in 2002. They got a modification, so they got a new loan in 2003 for People's Choice. All right. Then the deed was transferred here. So I wanted to see what that was all about. And this was a quick claim deed. So it went from John and Phyllis, Rachel, okay, to John, Phyllis, and Tasha, Rachel. Okay. So they added in some kind of a relative here. Okay, maybe a daughter, don't know. So they added in there. And that's just a simple quick claim deed. They just put her on the property. And that was in 2005. Also in 2005, you'll notice at that same time, okay, see the recording dates here, they got this new mortgage modification again. So I think they brought the person with good credit onto the property and then applied for refinancing, because that was, again, back in 2005. Easy money. And you'll see Tasha now is on this mortgage as well. It should pop up in a minute here. There we go. So here's the new mortgage on the property, and now this one is for $170,000. The original one was $125,000. This was for $170,000. Again, think of the times, 2002, 2003, 4, 5, property values, especially in Florida, were just going up in value, and they were able to refinance this by adding another family member on there for the credit, and that's what they did. And then it was assigned over here to Chase. There's your assignment. Okay. And then here you have a satisfaction of mortgage. Okay. So that means the mortgage is paid off. All right. Now, how did that happen? Okay, so they got this new loan. It was assigned over very quickly to Chase, and then it was also paid off. It was satisfied. Okay, why? Because they did what? They got some kind of a new loan. Do those dates match up? That's 2005. That was probably on this refinance. Yeah. So when they refinanced this, or when it was assigned from actually from People's Home Loan. Okay, so let me back up. So it started countrywide. They were able to refinance through People's Choice Home Loan. Then People's Choice Home Loan is the one who assigned it over to Chase. Okay, there's People's Choice Home Loan Incorporated. They're the signor. Okay, and they assigned it over to Chase. Okay. So Chase had this loan. Then how did Chase get paid off? Well, they got paid off because Ameriquest refinanced them, okay, the $170,000. Okay, so when they got refinanced, obviously Chase gets paid off. That's why that loan was satisfied. Now this is the new loan, okay? So this is the new loan that is on the property. All right, so started here, went to People's Choice. People's Choice sold it to Chase. Chase got paid out when the new loan was created by Ameriquest Mortgage Company, the one who is and has started the foreclosure process all the way up to the judgment. Okay, so you can see here, they defaulted on Ameriquest, and Ameriquest has initiated this foreclosure process. So that's what the list pendants is all about. Okay? It's simply putting them and the public at large on notice that they are initiating the foreclosure action, which would be a lawsuit against them. So that has been filed. Okay. And there's the court documents, there's an assignment. This assignment, this was an intra-company assignment. You can see it was assigned from Ameriquest Mortgage Company to Ameriquest Funding to REO Subsidiary, LLC. Okay, so they were just kind of moving and shaking, getting ready to foreclose on this and make this what? An REO property. So they moved this over while it was under foreclosure to their other subsidiary. That's what that is all about. It looks like down here, you might be wondering what these notice of commencements are. It looks like at one point in time, John was looking to go ahead and fix this property up or rebuild or something like that. But visual evidence tells us and physical evidence tells us that never happened. Okay, and the same thing in 2007. They tried again. So the document that we looked at, you can see it started as a list pendants. There's some court filings that have to be done. They had the assignment on there, and then it got to final judgment. So this final judgment on the county records is the same one that they sent Dennis to take a look at. Okay, so Ameriquest Funding 2 REO Subsidiary LLC is the one that took the action, took it all the way to final judgment. So did they foreclose? Is there still something here or not? Okay. Well, let's look a little further. There's another change in the deed here. So what happened here? Well, what happens on this one is the three parties, John, Phyllis, and Tasha, granted this property, this is the grant deed, granted this property over to just John and Phyllis. In other words, Tasha's like, I'm out of this one. Okay, get me off the deed. And they did that. Okay. So that's what the chain of the ownership went. And that's why that's where this deed transfer obviously came from here. Now, where is hang on one second. Let me look at this one more time. Okay, here's what I found. I need to make a change here. I'm going to fix this by recorded date. Because I know I found earlier a document that clearly stated – that AmeriQuest has ceased the foreclosure action. Let's see. We got the summary. That's not it. Whoa, didn't like that one. Didn't like that either. Oh, come on. Just bear with me a second, guys. I try to do all this in real time for you because I know when you're doing it at home, if I have everything prepared, it looks so easy, but it's not. I know I found in here, let's see, that's 2008, that's 2010. All right, let me just go back and see if I can find it this way. Yes, nope, that's not it. What I'm looking for, again, is there was a document, and I was hoping I could search by document type because there was a document that said that it's not it either. That's not going to be it. There was a document that simply said that they did not follow through on the foreclosure and they weren't going to at this time follow through on the foreclosure. Wow. Now, of course, I can't find it. Okay, so I know you can't see this little box, but I can't make that one bigger. What I'm looking for is the particular document type. So there it is. Okay, so now I changed my document type. Instead of looking at all documents, I just did it for this release, revoke, satisfy, terminate. Oh, gosh. I clicked the wrong button. Hang on a second. RST. Chase Countrywide Associates. No. Man. Home mortgage. Well, maybe I didn't see what I thought I saw. I already looked at the assignment. Let me go back to court papers. Now, this is just a motion where they have to show cause that they have good cause to foreclose, which they did, and that's why it proceeded. They got the final judgment. Man. Oh. Got it. Okay. This is as far as we can see. Now I remember what I did. Okay, this is as far as we can get at this point in time, but I'll show you where I changed this. Let me see if you got some questions there. Okay. So again, the story that we can gain from this, then I'm going to take it to the next phase, is they borrowed money from one bank. They ran into foreclosure problems. They brought in Tasha, got her on the deed, refinanced. That loan was then refinanced again at $170,000 from the original $120,000. So that lien was satisfied. Now we had the new lien from AmeriQuest. Obviously, it's gone all the way from list pending to final judgment. And you can see how long that took, by the way. Okay, 2007 is when they started it, and they finally got the final judgment in 2010. Okay, foreclosures were taking a long time during that period of time because there were simply so many to get done. So then Tasha was like, I want off of the deed. Now, did that take Tasha off of the mortgage and the loan obligation? No, she's still on there. So not really sure what they were trying to accomplish by having taken her off the property, but it didn't take her off the debt. She's still on the debt. She's still on the note, the mortgage. Bank's not going to let her off the hook on that. So the deed transfer here really did nothing other than take Rachel off of the, I guess, responsibility, potential liability for the vacant lot now. Okay. The city, we saw they already took that lien off. Okay. So I took this a step further, because I wanted to go through and see all of the foreclosure actions on this. This didn't quite tell us this. So what I did was I searched for the clerk of courts, because in judicial states, this is a lawsuit. Okay, so I just Google search. If you just Google search clerk of courts, comma Broward County or Broward County clerk of courts, you'll get to this website. Okay. And I'm going to go down here to public search, because I want to see the actual courthouse records on this to see what happened. Okay. So I'm not looking at felony traffic. I'm looking right here. This is a civil action, right? A list pendens is a lawsuit pending. Therefore, if it's a lawsuit, it ends up in civil court. Okay. So if I go to this link, now I'm going to put in the name again. And I'm just going to make that civil court. I'm not going to worry about the dates. Okay. Now we've got some different information here. All right. So the action was in 2007. So I'm going to start there. And we can see this is when that AmeriQuest funding to REO company started that foreclosure action. Now I'm going to click on case details. If you're playing along with me at home, you're going to see that you're going to have to open an account. It's free. It's fairly quick. But just log in as a company if you want to play along at home. You don't have to, of course. So I've already done that. So I'm going to log in. And now I can get the case details. Okay. So look right here. See, I wasn't losing my mind. The property sale was canceled. Okay, so they got the final judgment. They got the judgment amount. Everything was done. And they just canceled the sale. Okay. That's pretty much tells you what happened. So that was updated here. The canceled date was 2/25/2010 per the plaintiff's facts. So this came from AmeriQuest funding to REO company. They sent a fax in and said, cancel the sale. Don't know why. A lot of banks stopped the sales, right, during that period of time. They just put a pause on everything. This house burnt down. Who knows when all that sort of stuff happened. But we can see from these courthouse records the whole story, okay? So this is in all of these judicial states. If you look up the civil court records, which are going to be outside of the real property records, now we're looking at civil court records, you can see what happened here. Okay, the date of the case, the list pendants is filed, there's a petition, there's summonses that have to be sent, there's motions and such for dismissal, that's kind of a delaying tactic, motion for default. So there's all these motions that the attorneys are trying to file to postpone the foreclosure, motion then on their side saying we want to get they had to shut the case, they reopened it because there was a voluntary dismissal at that point in time, and then it went to the motion for the judgment. They finally got the judgment 3-4 months later, foreclosure form, all the different forms. This is a part of the whole process here. Notice of sale, copies mailed to all parties. So they announced a sale in December. They mailed out the copies in February of 2010. And then on 2/25, when it was scheduled to be sold, it was canceled. Okay. Same thing it says right there. So pretty neat way to do that. I don't think we've ever done that on a call before where I've taken you to the civil courts. So that satisfies that other answer. We know that the city lien is off of this thing now. They took that off. And we can see that it was not foreclosed upon because there's no other action on this, and now you can take it to that next step should you want to do that. Let's see if I had anything else there. No, we looked at that. Okay, so that's really what we found. So going back to your original questions here, is for some reason that note is still out there at the $170,000. I'm surprised the insurance hasn't paid something like that. The purchase price of the note, you can get it pretty cheap. I would really look at the value of that property, though. I would really take a strong look at that. Just because the courthouse is taxing it for $22,000 and they're telling you the value is somewhere between 30 or 40, I'm not satisfied with that. I really need to get somebody out there that can give me a real good idea of what it is on the fair market value. Okay. Because once you get this, what are you going to do with it? Okay. Now you can sell it as a vacant lot to a builder, to a neighbor, to whomever. But are you really going to get that much for it? Again, I'm going to leave that question up to you. That seems pretty expensive for a lot in that area. Just saying. Okay. Let's see. The fine, you don't have to worry about that. We took care of that one. Let's see. Yep. With our tapes, you get a lot of information, and that's what you guys start to realize when you start finding notes other places. You don't have all that sort of stuff. So I would get another BPO. Title, if you want to run the title, they kind of did that before. It didn't look like a full report for me, but one of the things about Florida is the records are out there. So there's everything we saw. I think that's all you're ever going to find on there. You could go back and search by the property address and see if something pops up, if you will. I was searching under the guy's name, but certainly anything filed judicially to foreclose on that's going to be through his name because he's still the owner of record. We saw that he's on there with his wife. Tasha's out of the picture, at least for the deed. There was a foreclosure, went to final judgment. Yep, it did, but the sale was canceled. Mm-hmm. There are two previous unsatisfied mortgages. Yep, we saw the satisfactions on there. So go back and look in the public records and look up those satisfactions again. And do you have any thoughts on prior mortgages? No, we kind of outlined that. It's not unusual. You had people who were in trouble. They brought on another borrower with obviously stronger credit on. They were able to refinance their way out of the immediate problem to ultimately the bigger problem, which was they couldn't afford the payments on a $120,000 loan. So let's get a $170,000 loan, right? Cash out refi and the writing was on the wall. So that's why it never went to sale. These other lenders were cashed out, if you will, because of the refinancing. Okay. All right. Excellent. Hope you guys like that. Let's see if there's any questions here. Yeah, Roman's saying he's had a sale canceled before because the bank forgot to pay the law firm. And the law firm just said, hey, we're not getting paid. We're not following through on it. That stuff happens. You're dealing with these big bureaucracies, and certainly that kind of thing can happen. Let's see. No, this wouldn't be, this is not a hardest hit fund scenario at all, because hardest hit fund is keeping people in their home, right? Just to refresh memories on that. The hardest hit fund is to keep people in home. So it would have to be a home people are living in and not making the payments on. Yeah, you probably put that in earlier before you realized that there is no house anymore. So, yeah, but they still have that for some reason, that they're still showing that they owe that balance on the loan. Only exit strategy I can think on this one, again, is to sell that lot either to a developer. Maybe the neighbors want to buy it, but I don't think you're getting anywhere close to $30,000 to $40,000 on this thing. So truly on this one, you know, you're looking at a non-performing note that there is never going to be performance on it. It's just not. So you're essentially doing what? You're buying the real estate. So you're buying that lot. So you've got to really zero in on what is the value of that lot, and then how much am I willing to pay for that based upon that value? You know, that's really what this is all about. You're acquiring this property just by getting the note first. So what's it going to cost me to buy it? What are my closing costs? I mean, factor all of that in on this, and then what could I sell this for? I mean, this might be something you pre-market. You talk to a real estate agent, you want a BPO on this. Hey, do you have anybody who specializes in buying lots? Do you have any developers that are looking for lots to build? You know, and maybe you can get that kind of set up ahead of time before you go ahead and close on the note. Look, no developer is going to know how to buy the note and do all this sort of stuff. So I wouldn't worry about that. Yeah, Lisa's saying out in Silicon Valley, that lot would be worth $1 million. Yeah, no kidding. I got you. Not there in that part of Fort Lauderdale. So what's the next step? Pick up foreclosure complete. Yeah. With the note buyer, the issue with the deed. So this would be something if you bought the note, if that's, you know, that's what I'm gathering here, is you would buy this note and then just proceed on the foreclosure. Now, what I would try to do in Florida, of course, is we have what's called the assignment of foreclosure. So if you can go to the last lender, okay, which is that REO subsidiary, if you can go to them and get an assignment of foreclosure from them, then you're already there. You already have final judgment and everything else. All you have to do is schedule the sale. If you can't get that assignment of foreclosure, then you got to start all over. So again, this is something you might be buying this note and looking at 12 months and probably a couple $1,000s to foreclose. So buying something like this, you got to factor in all those other costs. You're going to have to maintain the property. That shouldn't be that expensive, but you want to cut the grass, that sort of thing. Not saying it's not doable. You just got to, you know, make your numbers work. Wow. Okay. All right, so let's move on then. This is Gilbert. Pretty quick one, actually. Gilbert, just received news that the recorder's office refused to record our certified copy of our assignment of mortgage. So now we cannot proceed unless the original assignment of mortgage from this company to this other company gets recorded, re-recorded. Otherwise, the only thing we can do is sue on the note, obtain a judgment, file a lien, then foreclose on the lien, or deed in lieu from the estate may be the way to go if the estate can get some ducks in a row. Okay, so I ran this one by Charles also, Gilbert, and we were both really kind of surprised because it looked like to us that the assignment of mortgage had already been filed once. So we were both surprised that they wouldn't take a certified copy of the assignment and record it. But, you know, different counties can do different things, I suppose. And so that, first of all, was odd to us, but okay, it's odd to us, but that's what they're telling you, and they're not going to record it otherwise. I know also, just for background for everybody else on the call, that Gilbert does have an attorney working on this, and this came back through the attorney. So where we are is where we are. So my response to this, which Charles really kind of echoed, was on something like this, you got to take the path of least resistance and just go with it. So you have retained an attorney to work with you on this. And obviously, if you can get a deed in lieu, easiest way to go. Now, I'm assuming that, you know, you're aware if there are any other liens on the property and that kind of thing. But assuming that there aren't any other liens on the property, you know, getting a deed in lieu obviously is the easiest way to go. But obviously, there's an indication here from you that, well, maybe that's not going to be an easy way. Maybe there's a couple different people that own this and are involved, and you got to get signatures and everything else. So I would pursue that. I don't think they would call that dual tracking. You could check with your attorney if you could pursue the deed in lieu and also pursue this this judgment, you know, and sue just on the note and do it that way. And at the same time, try to pursue this. So I don't think they would call that dual tracking because you're not really looking to collect a debt. You know, you're really just looking to collect a document here. Here you're, you know, you're suing. That's one thing. So this, can you sue on the note and pursue a deed in lieu at the same time? Would be a question I would ask your attorney, and then, you know, react accordingly. But this shouldn't hold you up in any way. So you may want to try to do all three options at one time if you can, and see which one becomes the path of least resistance. So I'm going to click on you just to see if I've answered that fully for you. Hey, Gilbert.
Gilbert, hey, how are you?
Good, good. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, you know, just looking for what to do. This is kind of the first purchase that I've made, so when he came back with this information, just wanted to find out what was the best thing to do, because the deed in lieu is difficult. It shouldn't be difficult, but for whatever reason, it is in this instance, so. I'll have to reach out to the attorney and find out if we can do both of those things at the same time.
Yeah, I kind of had a feeling you figured that's what our answer would be, but I did want to run it by Charles just to make sure that there was something I didn't know where he said, oh, no, you know, file it this way or something, but he didn't. He came back and just said the same thing. He goes, man, I'm really surprised they wouldn't take the certified copy, but if that's their stand, that's where you are, so now we got to react for that.
This is Ohio, so.
Is it? Yeah. All right. Best luck.
Thanks.
All right. Okay. Let's see. I think that's what we had, right? I think I covered, yeah, covered everything. They're good. Glad you like that. I like showing all that background research. It does take a little time. I was going back through it because I obviously did it earlier today, so it's just going back through. But that's sometimes you got to look at all the above, you know, civil court, courthouse records, and come up with it. That's I don't think your O&E reports, title companies, I don't think they really go and look at the civil court documents. I think they just look at real property records. So in judicial states, that may be something you want to take a look at. Okay, so got all of that done. Oh, wait a second. I wanted to show Ken. Ken, when you go to the website, just go to Connect and go to News and Archives. That's where the calls are archived. And that's where I put the news headlines. So it should be right there. If it's not coming up on yours, you might have to hit refresh so it re-downloads this latest information. I just put that in there shortly before the call. So if you were on the website before that, you'd have to refresh it. Okay, so we got that one today. All right, now we're going to have a little bit of fun here. It'll be a no gold class. Yeah. Still not there. Huh. Well, I'm not sure, Ken. Said he logged out and back in twice. Maybe close out your browser and clear your history and then do it. So it might be still looking at your history in there. Just because you logged out, it might still be pulling up your history on there. So just do a little refresh on it. You should be good. Or just close out your browser, reopen it, clear your history, and you should be good to go. Okay, so we're going to have a little fun here. If we're going to do this little test your knowledge. So I'm going to put up a series of multiple choice questions, and you can answer them at home, and then we'll go back. I'll give you the correct answer to all of them, and we'll see how you did. If you don't feel like doing that, it's 5 o'clock, so you got if you don't have the time or what have you, you can check out and leave the webinar. For those who want to hang in and go through this, we'll go through it and see how everybody does. Maybe we'll just do 10, 11, 12 questions, something around there. Okay, so I've made this as big as possible. I'll give you kind of some time to read through them, take out a pad and pen, and just answer as best you can. Then we'll come back and outline what the answers are. Okay, so I'm starting. I've got a whole list of these. I've got over 100 questions that I've done. These are a part of the questions that we may be using for the professional designations test. So I'm kind of previewing it for you, if you will. Okay, so I can't send you a copy of these because they may be a test that you have to take later on if you want the professional designation. So let's just go through that. All right, Emmanuel, catch you later. Got to get back to work. Right. While you guys are doing that, Jackie, yes, there will be a Golden Notes class. That will be, I'll have to pull up the website. So I'm going to block you guys for just a second. Sorry about that. And I'll move it over here to my other screen. I got to make it smaller. All right. Yeah, if you go to noteexpo.com, yeah, that's Sunday, November 8th, Jackie. So, Jackie, if you go to noteexpo.com, they'll have all the details there. Okay, so just write down the answers at home, and then we're going to come back and go through all of those. So you should have 17 done by now. I'm going to move it up. Okay, should have 18 done by now. Hope I'm not going too fast for you. Hang on, there's more, obviously, to question number 23. Go to 23 here. If I plan on pursuing hardest hit funds with a delinquent borrower, I can what? we'll just end on number 28. All right, I'll give you another 30 seconds. Okay, so we did 17 through 28. So let me just do this. I'll put up the answers for you here. Well, they renumbered, obviously. Hang on a second. Let me restart numbering. Boy. All right. Okay, never mind. I'll just remember. Okay, let's just go through them here. So number 17 is C. We'll go back up here and see what that was all about. 17 is C. If a collateral property backing a note you are looking to buy is already in foreclosure, in the foreclosure process, the answer is C. You could buy that note and let it foreclose. And we've had numerous case studies of that where the sale has already been scheduled. No problem. If you can buy that note cheap enough and then have it go to a foreclosure sale where you either get it back if that's what you want, or you can set your strike price where somebody else bids higher than you, and you end up getting cashed out, that can be a good way to go. Obviously, it can't be A, right? Wait until it forecloses and then buys the note, because what happens at foreclosure? Wipes the note out, okay? You should never buy it. No, of course not. You can buy it for reasons I just explained. And D, you could buy the note, but only if it is no less than 60 days from the date of the sale. That was just completely made up, okay? So the answer on that one is C, okay. So for, I'm going to slide this over here. I know there's a way to fix those numbers. I just can't do it right now. Okay, where is it? Okay, the next one, 18. 18 is D. Okay, 18 is D. Bankruptcy Chapter 7. Eliminates the note on the debt? No, it doesn't. It doesn't eliminate the note debt at all. The debt is still there, okay? It doesn't clear the title because the person is still on the property title. It doesn't set up an arrearage account, okay? What Chapter 7 does is exactly what D says. It eliminates the debtor's obligation to pay the note debt. That's why when we buy notes where there's Chapter 7 declared, we still have to foreclose or get a deed in lieu. Okay, because they're still on the title to the property. The note in the mortgage is still saleable because the debt is still there. All that's been eliminated is that person's obligation to pay the debt. So the answer there is D. Number 19 is B. Okay, bankruptcy records are available to the public. Yes, they are. And we do that at pacer.gov, right? So if we go to pacer.gov, that's where all of the bankruptcy records are. Okay, pacer.gov. Alrighty, so now we're looking at number 20. 20 is A. Okay, the answer is A. If I'm looking for the flavor of a note, okay, what would I do? Well, the title policy doesn't give you the flavor, right? The flavor being, again, what's the story here? You know, when you talk with Eddie about notes and deals, he's always interested, what happened here? What's the deal? What's the story? What's the flavor? You don't get that from a title policy. Title policy, you're getting what? You're getting what is the situation with the title and the liens and everything else. The BPO is just value of the property. The flavor, if you're looking up a Registrar of Deeds website, which we did earlier on the call, you don't know the flavor. You don't really know what happened there. We projected some things in that one where Tasha came in and they refinanced. So some of that we projected, but the real flavor of the deal would be in the collateral file. Now, sometimes that might be called due diligence file, but it's going to be in the collateral file. Hang on one second. Okay, so the collateral file for the most part has those letters in there, the hardship letter, what went wrong and how can we, you know, how much money do we make, what happened, I got hurt on the job, you know, all that sort of stuff. That's what we mean by the flavor, and that would be in the collateral file. Okay, the next one then would be, 21 is D. If I buy a non-performing note and find out that the property owner is dead, I'm out of luck unless I find the next kin. No, the next kin isn't on the property. It could be, I suppose, through some kind of a will. But same thing. If they're not paying the debt, we can still foreclose. Get immediate access to the property. No, you don't own the property. It's not in your name. Okay, because the beneficiary must take over the note obligation? No, they don't. They didn't sign for the note obligation. They might be willing to and able to, but they're not under any obligation to take that over. And obviously, D is your correct answer. You can just foreclose. Okay, they're not paying the debt. We don't need permission from the borrower to foreclose. We can foreclose. So living, dead, doesn't matter. In the legal battle with the beneficiary because the house was left to them. No. If a property is left by will to another party, they're on the deed, that's fine. But they're not on the note, they're not on the mortgage. When we're foreclosing upon what? The mortgage is the instrument that allows us to foreclose. So all we're doing is enforcing the mortgage. Well, they're not on the mortgage, so there's nothing they can do. Okay? Now, if they want to pay us off, that okay, that they can do. But your best answer for 21 then is it's okay. You can just foreclose. 22 is B, false. I am allowed to pursue hardest hit funds and foreclosures at the same time. They changed that about a year ago. That's what they call dual tracking. And I also mentioned that, ironically enough, earlier in the call today, dual tracking is when you're pursuing two solutions at one time. Dodd-Frank changed all that. Okay. Now, in class, I kind of explained this, but I also caveat this by saying this. If you introduce them to hardest hit funds, okay, and you advise them, hey, I would really, if I were you guys, try to get that, and they pursue that independently of you. You mention that, and they're taking the ball and running it, and you're just going down the foreclosure track, that's okay. Okay, you can't be pursuing both. You know, you can't be calling them and here's the documents and sign this and really forcing that hardest hit foreclosure and at the same time being foreclosed on them. Okay, Dodd-Frank changed that. So you can't do that. So your best answer on this one is false. You're not able to pursue both. And then just remember in your mind, let them pursue hardest hit funds. You head down that foreclosure road if that's what you want to do. Okay, number 23. Number 23 is A. If I plan on pursuing hardest hit funds with delinquent borrower, I can file foreclosure but must stop if I am assisting them with hardest hit funds. Why? Because of the previous answer. OK, Okay. So we can take foreclosure down to a point. Maybe we take the foreclosure to final judgment, and then we stop, and then we can assist them and promote hardest hit funds. That way, if they don't get approved, we can just pick up where we left off. Okay. So you can go down the foreclosure track as much as you want and then stop and then help them with hardest hit funds, because you're not doing two things at once. Okay. All right, that's the whole dual tracking thing there. All right, 24. Let's see, that was 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24 is B. 24 is B. The foreclosure process is the same throughout the United States. It should have been a pretty easy one, right? We all know that it's completely different. In class, we talk about going to foreclosurelaw.org, right? And that takes us to this. And then we saw we can click on whatever state we're in and then read about the foreclosure laws in that state. Because every state's different, right? Some are under title theory, some are under lien theory, and that means some are judicial, some are non-judicial, etc. Okay. 25, the occupancy status on a BPO is 100% accurate. And of course, your answer there is, well, that's false. Okay. These BPOs are drive-by BPOs, so they don't go knock on the door. They don't do all that stuff. What they're doing is looking for indicators. Is there a car in the driveway? Are there toys outside? Are there curtains in the windows? And if it is, they say, well, it's occupied. Okay. That's not 100%. Accurate. We've seen cases, of course, where people have left the curtains there and they, you know, the yard looks maintained, but there's nobody there. Okay. So it's not 100% accurate, nor is the value of the BPO, right? All right. 26. Which most accurately describes blighted properties? Which most accurately describes blighted properties? Okay. That's going to be number one. Dilapidated, unsafe, and unsightly. In fact, if you look up the definition of blighted property, that's what you're going to get. It's dilapidated, unsafe, and unsightly. Okay. Rundown neighborhoods aren't necessarily blighted. Boarded up property, well, boarded up property is a boarded up property. It could be in good shape, right? Maybe it's just boarded up to prevent vandalism or something like that. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's blighted just because it's boarded up. A blighted property is dilapidated, you know, just almost beyond repair. It's unsafe and unsightly. So that was A. All right, number 27. If I buy a non-performing loan on a vacant property, it's a good idea to get insured, monthly inspections, secure it, register it if required, or E, all of the above. Of course, your answer there is E, all of the above. Okay. When it comes to these vacant properties, don't forget some cities, some municipalities might require that you register that vacant property. Okay. So that could be the case. It's always a good idea to secure it, right? You don't want vandalism. You don't want people breaking in there, damaging it further, anything like that. And you have the right owning that note to do just that. You have the right to protect your property. Right. Obviously, get insured. I've got two case studies that I show in class now. Both the houses burnt down. Well, thank goodness they had insurance on them because they got back more money than they paid for the note. So you got to get that forced place insurance on there. And these monthly inspections are important for that. You know, just have somebody go by just monthly, take pictures of it. And that way, if something does happen to your like vacant property, like a fire, you can then go back and show, hey, every month I had somebody checking that out. Okay. So you want to have somebody go by and do that. So your answer there is E, all of the above. Okay. 28. We can call the county and get property tax information on a property that we don't own. And of course, your answer there is A. That's true. Right. That's all a part of public records. We don't have to own the property. We can find out information about the property. Okay. You probably guys are getting ahead of me and doing the other ones there, too, I bet. Right. Websites like Zillow give an opinion of value based upon as is condition. No. Right. Now, they don't know what the as is condition is because all they're doing is looking at numbers. Okay. Zillow's is based upon what other things are selling for, what percentage square footage, bedrooms, bath. They have this algorithm that they go through to come up with value. They have no idea what condition the property is in. Okay. Property images on Google Earth are always current. And of course, your answer there is also false. Okay. Those property images on Google Earth are taken at certain times. That time is always shown on the bottom of Google Earth. So if we go back to, I think I still got it open. Yeah, if we go back to this one and I go back and look at the neighborhood down here, it shows me, it's going to be real hard for y'all to see that, but I've got it over my mouse there. It says image captured December 2014. Okay, so they always give you the image capture date on Google Earth as well. And I'll just do the last one there for you. If I buy a defaulted note on an owner-occupied property, I can foreclose, work out a modification, get a deed in lieu, or all of the above. Well, obviously the answer is all of the above. Any one of those exit strategies would work on an owner-occupied, non-performing note. So there you go. Let's see. Now I'll go and look at some of the answers here. Or look at some of the comments, I should say. Okay, Danny, I'm assuming that we went through this already with you, but there's those again. If you go through with the answers are again. Okay, gotcha. Oh, Dan, you're good. Okay, got it. Alrighty, fire truck. Yeah, we have the my wife and I downsize, right? The boys here this summer, of course, but he's heading back to school at the end of the month, and so we downsize. We can walk everywhere, the park, to the store, to, you know, restaurants, the whole thing. But part of the urban living is, every once in a while those fire trucks go go by. They get pretty loud. There's an intersection out here, and I guess they have to make all the extra noise during the intersection. But yeah, that's what that is in the background. I know Matt. Matt's got the same thing in Denver. Lisa's asking, on that foreclosure with a dead person, who do you serve? It doesn't say on serving. That means that you deliver to the last known address. Okay, so in a lot of these with the foreclosure, you have to attempt to let those people know. For example, if it's judicial, you have to let the public at large know. So you have to advertise in the legal section for a certain amount of time for anybody who has a claim on it. And then you also have to send out these letters to the last known address. Okay, but it doesn't stop us. There's nothing that they need to sign for us to foreclose. If they were alive, they could get an attorney, and the attorney could file, you know, additional roadblocks like we saw earlier where, you know, they file a motion to show that they this is all in good faith. So that sort of thing. Well, obviously a dead person doesn't have the attorney, so you're not going to have those. But you still have to go through the motions on those sorts of things. If it's a deed of trust, it's a lot easier, right? Because the deed of trust essentially said, if I don't pay you, you can sell the property. You know, so you just go to the trustee at that point in time. The trustee tries to contact and let the people know, schedule the sale. Let's see. Roman's looking at 23. If I plan on pursuing hardest hit funds with the delinquent borrower, I cannot file a foreclosure. I see what you're saying there. He's kind of looking at that and saying, well, if I plan on pursuing hardest hit funds with the borrower, I cannot. Yes, no, it wouldn't be a B, because you can file foreclosure even if you plan on pursuing the hardest hit funds. Okay, so you can file, because you can file foreclosure and you can start to move forward on it, and then you can stop. Okay, then you can stop and help them with foreclosure. But what I'm saying is, what I would do is I would start that pursuit of foreclosure. Let them work on the hardest hit funds on their own. Okay. That way we can, you're only pursuing one track, what they're doing with hardest hit funds kind of on their own, if you know what I mean. And that's the best way to handle it. So just because I plan on pursuing hardest hit funds doesn't mean that I can't file foreclosure. Okay. Good question, though. for 28. Yeah, Rick is just pointing out, as we always say, we can call the county and get the property tax information, which is really all this question asked, right? We can call the county and get property tax information on a property we don't own. That's pretty much what all the statement says, obviously. And yes, we can obviously get that. So that is true there. What he's saying is the information by going to the county might not be correct. Okay, and you're right. We talk about that in class. You want to verify that or get a tax certificate, you know, because just calling them up sometimes, they might tell you all the liens that are owed on the property versus just the taxes. Yes, but that's not really what the question said. But good point. And Danny, we got you. Let's see what Sylvia has here. Sylvia's saying, what if your service company is working on looking into hardest hit funds, can you pursue foreclosure? I'm going to go with a no on that one, because who does the servicing company work for? Okay, so they're working for you, so really you are the one on the note. You're kind of dual tracking on that. Now, again, having said that, are there hardest hit fund police looking for people that are dual tracking? Of course not. Of course not. It's just if something goes wrong and, you know, the foreclosure, and somehow your borrower finds out that you're doing dual tracking, that might have some implications down the road. So to avoid any of that stuff, just be tactful on how you pursue those things. You can certainly print out the information for them from the website. You can email it to them. You can tell them this is how it works. Here's the phone number, and call them and tell them, hey, let me know how it's going. Okay, that's a little different. I think what they're looking at with the dual tracking, it was really kind of lumped in there, because dual tracking really started why it was in Dodd-Frank is it was really going after the banks there. Okay. Because what banks were doing is they were pursuing a loan modification while at the same time pursuing foreclosure. So Dodd-Frank said, we don't think that's fair. You can only do one or the other. So if you're going to work with them and try to do a mod, stop the foreclosure, work on the mod, and then you can pick the foreclosure up later on. But hardest hit fund got kind of lumped in there too, because in a way, I guess that's considered some type of a loan modification. So just be careful on how you do that. Just handle it in a way where if something, and the odds are not great, but if something down the road were to happen, could they come back and say you were dual tracking, and what would the ramifications of that be? It's one of those things that it probably never will happen, but just err on the side of caution. So I'm thinking if we start foreclosure immediately after acquisition to get a ball rolling, and then in the process make the owner aware that they can stop it if they. Well, you got to be careful, Danny, on what you're saying there. You can't. What you can't do is. I'm trying to look for the right word, but you can't make. Threat's probably too strong, but you can't do one of those coercive type of deals where you're going, hey, if you don't do the hardest hit funds, we're going to foreclose. You can't set things up like that. That'll come back and bite you, and not saying that that's what you would do, Danny, obviously, but you can't coerce people that way. By same thing, a better example would be probably a deed in lieu. You can't say, all right, if you don't sign this deed in lieu, I'm not only going to foreclose on you, I'm going to go after I'm going to go after you for this deficiency judgment. Okay. So deficiency judgment means if I'm not made whole as the lender, if I don't get all my money back at the foreclosure sale, then I can come after you judiciously and sue you and go after a judgment. So you can't tell somebody you signed this deed in lieu, or not only will they foreclose, I'm going to enforce that deficiency judgment and come after your income and your boat, your car, whatever. You can't do stuff like that, obviously. And I know that was above and beyond your question there, Danny, but I'm just trying to overemphasize the points. Yes, that. Yeah. Okay, you got it. Yeah. So, yes, you don't. We've had cases of this too, where people have done, you know, pursuing hardest hit funds, and you don't hear from the people, and you don't know what's going on. It's one of the case studies I use in the Rich Rewards class where that happened, and they ultimately, in the background, were pursuing hardest hit funds and ultimately got approved, but they never let the lender know. You know, so the lender didn't wait around, the lender being one of our students. The note buyer didn't wait around. They pursued foreclosure. Those folks independently were pursuing hardest hit funds on their own. In fact, they didn't even communicate back to Natalie that they were doing that, but it was a pleasant surprise at the end. She made a heck of a lot of money on that deal because of it. So very good. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that. And it's always fun to kind of go through that and make sure we're just picking up some of these finer points here. So we'll do that again another time. We got a bunch of these questions, so excellent. All right, everybody. Thanks for being on the call, and I look forward to talking to you. I'm sure I'll be seeing some of you at the expo. I got Los Angeles coming up at a training. We're going to be in Tennessee also. Going to be in Nashville. In fact, Natalie's up in that area. I'll probably see her there. So, again, you know where to go and register and all that. Jackie was asking about the 8th is the Golden Notes class. But the Golden Notes class really is not for you guys. It's an introductory course. So I wouldn't plan on you being there on the 8th. It's really for new people because the Note Expo itself is open to anybody in the industry. Okay, so the membership appreciation dates are the 5th or 4th and 5th, and then the 6th and 7th, that's open to anybody in the note buying industry or people who want to get in the note buying industry. So Eddie's doing a Golden Notes presentation really for them on that that 8th day, okay? And there's information about that here as well for you. Okay, thanks again, everybody. Have a good evening, and talk to you soon.